This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
To Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. I am Pete, and I'm with Johnny. Johnny, man, what is going on?
Not much. Just working and performing at the show on the weekend. So, but to the point, let's just address the elephant in the room. This is probably our last one of the Houston footage.
Yeah, it's... the sale went through. It's now in Billy's court. He owns all the rights to the footage. He's been pretty close to the vest. I've reached out to sources and I've found absolutely nothing. Can't get anything.
Well, the way the statement was made by Bruce, it's like, thanks for all the support that they own the footage now. And it wasn't like, hey, great news. They own the footage now and they're going to keep it going. It had more of a somber, like, hey, it was fun while it lasted, kids. And it was, but who knows? But I don't think, I'm not thinking that's, who knows? Maybe he'll see it as a revenue stream, but I wouldn't get my hopes up.
Yeah, I don't know. I just got to see what his business plan is and see what he's going to do. I wouldn't get my hopes up either, because my hopes are not up. I pretty much think it's over. But you know what? You never say never in wrestling. I thought, I really thought the service was a unique type of niche type of thing. I brought back a lot of great memories because this was my wheelhouse as a kid growing up. And so it was great to reflect on, see some of the memories that I remember going to the shows, now seeing them on tape, getting to see stuff that I don't remember, but it happened. Finding out, the cool stuff is like finding out that Tully and Gino Hernandez had a blood feud with Milt Mascaris. Mm-hmm. That, I'd never heard that before. We always knew Gino was a good worker from World Class, but it was like, he only wrestled the Von Erichs, so it wasn't like you got to see the variety here of Gino working all these different guys. And Gino's, I'm not saying he's a Jerry Lawler at that level, but he's a top guy in a territory.
He's awesome.
And yeah, he's incredible. Same thing for Jose Lothario. Like, you didn't really realize how great he was until you were looking at this footage. You're like, God, he's been freaking fantastic in the 70s.
And
all the way up until he retired.
To be honest, before this, there was no talking point about how great Jose Lothario was. Didn't exist. No. I mean, maybe in a Shawn Michaels interview, that's it, and that's one of the biggest. And I was just thinking about this before we get started, because those are the principles of what we're going to talk about. There's a couple of things that I jotted down that this service gave us, as we think of more that I just loved. Number one, J.J. Dillon's cigar the way his character was there and the cigar. Tully, the fact that the dynamic duo live up to all the fucking hype. All the
totally
hype
agree.
And more.
Now, the duo was fantastic. We're just heat-seeking.
Just
magnets.
They were awesome.
You're right. And this is really where we get to see some real footage of them, And they're tremendous, and you got to put them up there as one of the best heel tag teams.
And we had, of course, Officer Isaiah McCoolcop, who is now, and by an extension of that, there are some fucking characters. You know me, I love searching the crowd for fucking characters, you know, and this crowd had a lot of fucking characters that you saw at ringside, be they the cops or the fans and
that creepy second.
The creepy second whose name we find out in this footage. They say his name. It was my only point. Okay. We finally get the last thing we got is we finally got that motherfucker's name. But then most importantly, is listening to Paul Bosch on commentary. Yep. I mean, just was so much fun. I mean, fun and like, what the fuck is he talking about? Or fun and just like, this guy is, he knows exactly what he's doing for his audience, and he's so smart with it. And then the tone of, especially the 70s stuff, the tone of it being, it felt like, I can see why you would be, this was the wrestling I grew up with. This is what I watched on Saturday night, because it was about my town. Wasn't about my state. This is about Houston. Yeah, that's how Memphis had that same thing. And this is for you people in this town, and how connected he was in that town.
Had a flavor of
Yeah, exactly. It was for Houston and that guy's audience in his town that he ran, and where he's a known legend, you know, in that town, you know. From the wrestling, just for the wrestling, from, as I found out, that earring commercial and ad, you know, how huge that was. So, yeah, there was a lot of really cool shit. Hey, and on a personal level, once again, by us just doing a podcast, we ended up talking to, dude, we interviewed Kevin fucking Sullivan because of this, you know. I mean, yeah. It's pretty cool. So, There's far more good memories than it had. It's too bad it's ending, but what we got was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it really is. Again, it's like such a unique and special thing. And because, I mean, there's not a lot of, I mean, unless you count the WWE for the most part, there is not a ton, there's nothing even close to the amount of arena footage that we get, except for in Houston, you know. Mid-South was probably second, had quite a bit. But, man, it's other than that, man, it's hard to find a lot of arena footage. And Houston is really where you can actually see where these guys, really where they really got their reputation from. It really wasn't from TV where they get their reputation of being a great worker or a great wrestler. It's how they did it in the arenas. And a lot of these guys cemented that, like Wahoo McDaniel. We realized, yes, you're right, he's an incredible wrestler. Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Duggan, you know, this thing got us, we never got any real, we only got highlights of the JYD Butch Reed feud. Here we got a ghetto street fight, we got a regular match, and we got a dog collar match. I mean, it's, it gives us a flavor of the feuds that we only had angles and highlights of. We got to see the whole entire fabulous one, Guerrero's feud. We got to see the Guerrero feud versus DiBiase and Murdoch.
Yeah, and to that, and that also, we got to see outside of just a match or two, where we had footage and remembering the Aftermag story, just exactly how the heel fabulous ones worked as heels. You know, and because we have matches here and there, but what we've got, including some singles stuff, you're seeing like, oh, okay, this is what they're running and how they're playing heel, and they're great at it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, nowadays everything is on YouTube, like from all promotions all over the world, or, you know, everything has a streaming service, so everything is up to date, so you can actually legitimately watch everything if you wanted to, and could make a case for what really is the feud of the year or whatever. Here in the 80s, a lot of times people were just voting on what they were, you know, in the early Meltzer observers, they're probably watching what they're getting from their TV, you know, or their region and stuff, or what they're getting from the aftermags and stuff. And Houston, now we're actually getting to see it all fleshed out. And like, you know, you see the whole entire Duggan feud and with DiBiase. we get a chance to see the Mongolian stomper work. I became an instant. You always heard Brett talk about Archie Gouldy as a great worker, and well, here we have some footage, and I would agree with Brett. You'd see the spoiler. We get to see some young spoiler, and you see a lot of Undertaker tendencies. And since he had a big input on the Undertaker's career, we get to see some Buzz Sawyer, Butch Reed, young Magnum TA before he goes to the Crockett's. But you saw all the blueprints of why he was a megastar. Early Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express. More Ricky Morton before he became a rock and roll.
Oh, you know, we get to see this Ricky Morton, Ken Lucas tag team that if you're a hardcore fan like us and don't listen to any podcasts, they Ricky Morton, that team's talked about. It's like, oh, you should have seen them. You know, they were quite something down in Houston. They were.
Or San Antonio, and then stuff. And then, you get to see them.
And what was awesome about this, a lot of the promos, we got some amazing promos. We also, so like, and now we're going to take you on a time capsule shit to some old black and white stuff. And it was always really cool. There was always these weird little things they'd find. I think the womanly art of self-defense, which I'm so sad that now it's all lost. There were supposed to be 10, Pete. There was only two.
I know. It's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, but. And all those little pieces that they'd put out there, especially some of those promos, some of the promos we heard were just amazing. Like that Butch Reed promo we heard recently.
Butch Reed, I was thinking the Bachman.
Bachman going, oh yeah. Yeah, so awesome.
I think one of my favorite memories is or my favorite trio was, I think, Paul Bosch with the Dynamic Duo. Disgusted. He was like Lance Russell with Bill Dundee type
of thing. It was the best, you know? Because like we talked about, especially with Gino, because we all know that he loved Gino like a son, and so therefore Gino was the only one allowed to be disrespectful to him. Because everyone showed, every heel even showed respect to Mr. Bosch. You know, let me tell you, Mr. Bosch, and then they'd yell this, but Gino would fuck with him. And he'd give Gino this look like, you little punk, I'll kill you. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I ran into Tully Blanchard this weekend, and I wanted to talk to him about Houston wrestling so bad, but he was having a conversation.
But he was in the men's room. So.
He was having actually a conversation with Rachel Ellering, and so I didn't want to go just, you know.
Mr. Big Shot over here.
So I went up. Yeah, well, I went up and interrupted anyway. But I wasn't going to interrupt him, you know, and then start talking to him. I already apologized for interrupting
him. By the way.
But he could tell because I'm wearing a world-class championship wrestling t-shirt. Uh-huh. So he sees me and he just even gives me a heads up, like, hey, man, you know, like the head, you know what I'm saying, the head pump?
Uh-huh.
Yo, because he obviously knows I was going to wreck him. Nice and wearing that fucking shirt and stuff. Yeah, he was super cool, and then signed the Space City poster that I had.
Looks like to you, Mr. Running in these big circles.
Yeah, I know, right? But I really wanted to talk to him about it, but didn't get the opportunity.
Mr. Blanchard, I know you're busy. I wanted to ask you about a few things. But before I say anything else, sir, you did not quit in that match. You did not say those words, and more people should know that, sir.
There we go. And then we get a taste of like Tiger Conway Jr., the baby face that no one talks about up there as because of the great
Another guy,
no one's seen the footage,
another aftermath guy. Yes, Tiger, you know. It was one of those. Like we said, every time you see those covers, like the young lions of professional wrestling, and be Barry Windham and whoever, and Tiger Conway Jr. And he was just that guy who was in that magazine to me. I didn't know anything about him, and he was great.
I mean, that cage match with Terry Gordy and Ted DiBiase was incredible. Then followed up with the cage match, country whipping match with Ted and Michael. Yeah, the Ted Michael Hayes feud, which was incredible, and so much great stuff. And I mean, the world title match of Terry Funk versus Harley Race. That's a holy grail right there. I mean, a lot of these matches are holy grails, but that's one that really stands out as a total holy grail and stuff. But so many great memories. Just the memories. I'm glad we got it for how long we did. I want to thank out Bruce Tharp and James Ratcliffe is number two for really doing a great job and bringing old school wrestling and history that was needed and preserving it and giving us an opportunity for a tariff for an area. For a town that, you know, it was covered in the aftermags, but unless you lived in Houston, you never got to see it, and there wasn't this type of ton of footage around, because it was before the VCRs and stuff, so there's some, but man, here they gave us a lot. They put up about 400 or 500 matches, so you really got a great flavor of what the town was all about, and who are the big stars and how they would promote and stuff, you know?
Has anyone checked on Matt D? I mean, someone talked.
We have talked.
Talked him off the ledge here.
It's not a good thing because this is by far his favorite thing in wrestling. Who am I? Me and Matt D would talk every day whenever a release would break or whenever there wasn't one that hasn't released yet. We'd be like wondering when we're going to get what we're getting, what do we think's coming up, or who do you what matches do you think is coming, or where do you think they're going next? Have you heard anything?
I hope I'm just saying I hope this isn't the straw that breaks the camel's back there. I love the guy, but I don't know if he's the most I think he's kind of fragile mentally. I'm kidding, man. I'm kidding.
but what we're gonna talk about, this is obviously sounds like and feels like our final show. Johnny and I talked, and we thought we'd talk a little bit about, and they covered a little bit on with the footage, and thought we'd talk about the Jose Lothario versus Gino Hernandez feud. And I actually did a little research on this thing.
Ooh.
And it started in 1978 when Gino was like this up and comer, kind of. It's almost like he was a baby face, so he was kind of like it was almost like the Bruno Sammartino, Larry Zbyszko in that essence, where Gino was Jose's like young boy type thing, protege.
Let's go with protege. Young.
Okay. Yeah, better than young boy.
Young boy. That's I hate that term. It's like so young boy.
I don't even know why I said it. Yeah. And his mentor was Jose Lothario, and they would tag frequently. And Lothario, at the time, was considered the top babyface in Houston and was a legend in the city. Slowly, Gino started getting cocky with his attitude in the ring and started changing. He ended up, he quit associating with Jose. Finally, he turned full-fledged heel. The fans started clamoring for Jose to step in and beat Gino. Jose would just go on interviews and say that every young wrestler has to find his own way and still considers Gino like a son and that he'll be there for Gino when he needs him. Gino would go on TV and like insult Jose and say that the old man was scared of Gino and was smart to stay out of his way, etc. Those type of promos. And at one point, Gino slapped Jose and Jose walked away. The second time Gino did it, Jose fought back and the feud was on. In 1979, Gino bleached his hair blonde. And you know why he did that?
Well, let's see. Because I know he was trying to get heat with wearing pink tights and blonde hair and calling himself gorgeous Gino get the hey faggot, heat. But also I would imagine to set up the upcoming haircut angle, or also so the blood would show up better in the blonde hair.
Well, according in the promos, he bleached his hair blonde because he was tired of trying to make people believe he was a Mexican.
Oh,
Gino
shit.
Said, yeah, Gino said he would no longer bleach his hair brown to appease the Mexican fans and the promoters.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay. I was thinking in like, well, why do you do it, you know, as a performer? Yeah. But as far as the reason why to the audience there, that I used to, this is my real hair color. I used to dye it brown to pretend to be one of you Mexicans. Yeah. That's insane. God, I wish we had that.
I know. I'm dying when I read
this.
That's hilarious. And this is, I got all this information from Mark Nolte, who passed away a few years back, who was in charge of the Wrestling Classics message board, but it was also behind the scenes in San Antonio, and it would announce every now and then in World Class and Southwest Championship Wrestling, and every now and then Houston too. So he had firsthand things. So after that, the fans just wanted to murder him in Houston. So Jose Lothario, his former mentor, was goaded into a hair versus hair match. To the shock of everyone, Jose lost. So for months, Jose begged for a rematch, but Gino, no way. Finally, Jose offered up to put up his career up against Gino's hair. Gino agreed, but only if Jose brought his bags to ringside, along with a big metal drum, to light a fire and burn his trunks immediately after the match. Can you freaking believe it?
That's awesome. That's fucking awesome.
I know. I so wish we had this. And it was, according to Nolte, it was one of the quickest sellouts in the history of the Sam Houston Coliseum. There was legit tension that this was the last time the fans would get to see Jose. Because, you know, this is based off the, he already lost to Gino. So they, you know, so the crowd, Bow, you bleed back then.
And he was old.
And the crowd, And then the crowd tore the roof off when Jose won. And,
literally.
According to Nolte, he's never seen another hair angle come close. Of course, I have never seen this angle. My favorite hair angle included Gino, but it was the dynamic duo of Gino and Chris Adams versus the Von Erichs. And I thought the blow off it caught at the Cotton Bowl.
Yes, it was.
Where every babyface got to kick a clip of their hair because they were. I thought that was incredible.
I thought that was disgusting behavior on the part of those people. You know, they're all just ganging up on them too. There's just a ton of them, and then it's like,
and Gino selling for Chris Von Erich's tackle.
That too. They're like, how can we kill this team is starting to get cheers. How do we kill this? Here's how we kill it. It's bad. Okay, you know what? Kevin and Carrie, they get to shave the head. Fine, not. The local DJ got to and everything, and I just told him, like, how are you not on there on the bad guy's side here? This,
oh jeez, I know that was the best. What's your favorite hair?
Well,
angle?
I'd love that until that part of it. Even though Chris Adams is and Gino's selling during that is amazing.
Amazing, and the build is amazing.
Oh, the build's
where
fantastic.
Clipping every baby, where they get a clip every baby face's hair. I mean, that was fucking
it was
genius.
Great. But my favorite is Austin Idol and Tommy Rich outsmarting Jerry Lawler in the cage and shaving his head.
That was like the worst haircut ever. I mean, it wasn't even a shave.
I don't give a shit. That was fucking amazing.
It was super
heated, amazing.
Yeah.
That's my favorite That's one amazing, off the top of my head. Yeah. Hey, no pun intended. Just because of the amazing heat and then the promos of them holding up his hair with Paulie. And I loved that.
Yeah. And then he says he's never seen an angle come close. He said the little touch of making Jose bring his bags and a metal drum for the fire was absolutely brilliant. And then he just goes, that's the genius of Paul Bosch. And I mean, that angle,
that's great.
Sounds incredible. We get some footage here. And I actually have some, breakdowns of all their matches and stuff. The first singles match started in August 19th, 1978. Jose lost to Gino. And then we got a Mexican death match where Gino again defeats Jose. And this was on September 15th, 1978. I wrote initials down. Now I can't even remember what the gimmick match. Oh, no. Karate glove match. We have that promo the network has on NWA On Demand has where they build it up. And this one, Gino loses to Jose on September 29th, 1978. We get the hair match where Jose loses to Gino on November 10th, 1978. Just in a regular match, Gino defeats Jose December 8th, 1978. Texas death match, again. Gino goes over in that, and that's a match we have on footage, and we'll talk about that. Then we get Gino and Killer Car Krupp defeat Mil Mascaris and Jose on January 28th, 1979. This one's at the Summit, which was the bigger building. Then Jose defeats Gino in a change match, and if he loses, what he's talking about, and if Jose loses, he has to lose town on February 9th, 1979, but Jose pulls it off and wins, so this is the blow-off that he was talking about. They come back around again on a 2-out-of-3 fall on the next month, on March 20th, 1979, Jose wins. Now it transitions a little bit, where it's Gino and Grand Marcus defeat Jose, Lothario and Halicone on June 15th, 1979. Then we have the American Tag Titles next month, same teams, and the same result on July 20th, 1979. Then we get a double shot match on August 3rd, 1979, where first Jose beats Gino. Then in a dogfight, loser gets painted yellow. I mean, I can't imagine what the hell a dogfight is. What do you get dogfights? Anything goes?
It's probably... anything goes. First thing I think of is a dog collar match?
Could be. You know? Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, I'm just looking at the results. And Gino wins again. And this time Gino gets painted... Jose wins and Gino gets painted yellow. Then the next month, we get September 7th, 1979. Gino wins the match. Then on the following week, September 14th, 1979, we have a Mexican death match where Jose and El Halcón beat Gino and Grand Marcus. Then on October 26th, 1979, we have Jose Lothario, El Halcón, and Mil Mascaras beat Grand Marcus, Gino Hernandez and Grand Goliath. We got that match. We'll be talking about later on. On December 16th, 1979, Jose and Tiger beat Gino and Grand Marcus. I believe we have that match we'll be talking about in a bit. December 14th, 1979, American Tag Titles, Gino and Grand Marcus beat Tiger Conway and Jose Lothario. On the December 28th, 1979, same match, except they reversed the results. And the final match we're going to talk about tonight is January 4th, 1980, where we have Tiger Conway, Jose Lothario, and Kerry Von Erich defeat Gino, Killer Brooks, and Grand Marcus in that gimmick they love to do in Houston, which was the two-ring tag team situation. And we'll get to that later. And then they wrestle here and there for the next year or so. So this was just an epic feud, and it seemed like a trope of Jose Lothario from the 70s, some of his biggest feuds all the way to where his final big feud was against Buddy Landell was he always was wrestling like really flamboyant, colorful characters from Gino to Superstar Billy Graham to Buddy Landell, he was always fighting for the Mexican honor when he's feuding with guys. Another thing I really wanted to see was Hibbs and superstar Billy Graham's feud. Because I think Graham would have bumped really big for Jose's punches, and I think it would have been interesting, especially the way Graham was a great promo and stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Superstar Graham might not be the best wrestler in the world, but as we've seen from some of his shit with Bruno, he knows how to sell getting punched in the face.
Oh, yeah. He can take a, yeah, he can bump very well. But hey, those are the results. Why don't we take a break here, Joey?
Yes.
And we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlayStationNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStationNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStationNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Coming soon from the creative minds of the Place to Be Nation Pop Network, the audio adaptation that no one was asking for, but everyone deserved. Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater presents Watchmen, an audio feast for your ears. Thrill to the exploits of the comedian.
These are demons. It's an intergalactic invasion into this space through people. They have sexual rituals, some of the most ancient Egyptian rituals, where they believe they are possessed by entities, space aliens.
Silk Spectre.
Good. Hey, licking your finger, it's like licking a battery. It's all sort of...
Night Owl.
Yeah, well, you know how it goes. Sometimes I come down here and sit around a little bit, think about the times when we were making the towns, doing the drugs, fucking the rats.
Dr. Manhattan.
Clearly, you don't really care about what stimulates me.
Ozymandias.
Puta, the Soviets, Vietnam, anyone? Mila Jovovich?
And Rorschach.
But what it doesn't change is the fact, and this is something we can all agree on, that all of the whores and politicians will look up and they'll shout, "Save us, JR!" And I'll look down and I'll whisper, "Ma."
You won't believe your ears. You won't believe the dark places your imagination will take you. Featuring cameos from some of your PTBN favorites.
Baby, that's quite a drop, I said.
Oh, they're just paying me to handle monsters in outer space? No.
Maybe it was a couple of guys and they overpowered him.
He cometh up and swerve, cut down like a flower.
Fly me to the moon, let me fuck amongst my star. Oh, I guess Dr. Osterman finally arrived.
Remember his gimmick?
It's Watchmen, the greatest graphic novel of all time, as you've never heard it before. Transformed into the most self-referential collection of in-jokes on this or any other medium. Only from the hard-traveling fanboys and Place to Be Nation Pop.
We're back. And wow, man, that's a lot of matches for one town of these guys. And that's the thing about the territory days. They found ways to keep it interesting. They'd base it off one big angle, and then they just do little pieces of business to add on to the angle, or take it, make it left when you think they're going to go right, or what have you. And
it's literally what it is, and it's not a negative thing when I say that's a promoter getting every possible thing out of this.
Yep.
That possibly, yep. Is it drawn? Yep. You always switch it over into tag teams. That's how you did it back then.
Yep.
Switched over into tag teams, and you had a big decisive singles victory for the babyface, but you're going to keep this running through tag teams and stuff because people are still paying to see it. And until people stop showing up to see it, they're going to do it, yep. You know, and you just got to figure out ways, you know, and it was simpler back then. We'll just give them partners.
Yeah.
and Gino will have various t-shirts.
Yep. And that's the thing, man. They have, you base it on two strong characters and an issue, and you're able to draw money on it. And, it's not a lost art form or anything. They still do it, but just do it differently. As opposed to like the indie scene isn't like that. It's more based on work rate and stuff like that. While here, it's, I mean, yeah, both guys are great wrestlers, but
I'll tell you what. I tell you what, if you're an indie and you're just running the same town, you're going to start trying to come up with compelling storytelling and ways to do it this way.
Yeah.
Than anything else if you're going to keep people coming.
I totally agree.
That's what ROH, when I first started going, was still like, you know, it was Philly. Philly and New Jersey. That was it. You know, I'm starting to go to New York. So they had tons of fucking entertainment angles and ways to stretch things out that were hot.
Yeah.
Just like this, because it was the same audience everywhere.
Yep. I mean, even now on the network, the WWE network, because it's, they don't need to rush through and give, you know, people aren't buying pay-per-views anymore. They don't need to, they're stretching their feuds more like how they used to back in the 80s, where you're getting 1, 2, 3 shots. I mean, look at Orton and Jinder, you know.
I was just about to say that no matter what you think of either of them as wrestlers, okay, take that aside. Put that aside. The one complaint that drives me crazy, and it's because of what we grew up with, is people going, "Fucking 3 months in a row of this shit." I'm like, are you kidding me? that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it has to be right. Yeah, I mean, hell.
Yeah, I'm like, if you're Crockett, it's even longer.
Yeah, but 1989. People talk about Ric Flair's 1989. Yeah. He wrestled Ricky Steamboat and wrestled Terry Funk as his two feuds. You know, I mean, you get a year out of two opponents.
Yeah, if you could do it, you know. But the WWF model, I always felt it was subconsciously based on the we'll get back to Houston in a second because this is not just old school booking, but fell onto the old MSG model of do we get three at the Garden?
Yeah.
Do we get three at the Garden? Because then you get it really usually falls within a 3 month thing now is what they're doing with a lot of it, even longer if it's hot. And when I hear those complaints from people about that, I was like, that's just the way it's supposed to be.
That's how wrestling works. Yeah.
It's long-term storytelling, and which is one of my criticisms. I like the modern product, but one of my biggest criticisms is just rushing through stories.
Yeah.
And if and this is a feud, it's about a belt, you know, there's no wacky bullshit. It's just about two guys fighting over a belt for 3 months. So
well, part of the problem is with it nowadays is because there's so much damn television. You gotta, it's a lot harder to do.
But I think that you're, like you said, they know, being it's the network now, they're like, okay, you know, we can take it a little slower. We better.
Yeah. Or we're going to burn everything out.
Better. But that's, I'm going to definitely get this back to Houston, but that's an old school mentality, and no one was more brilliant at aspects of it than Paul Bosch.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, let's look at some of this footage here. And the first match we're going to look at is from January 7th, 1979. And it's just Gino versus Oxbaker. The only reason I included this is because of the opening of it, which is Gino opens up with a long, where he tells Jose that he broke his arm, and a brawl ensues between both guys, and Jose's ripping Gino's shirt because he has one of those shirts that says "I broke Jose's arm."
Yeah, he had done it at the mall.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we get this just, you know, a little match between the other guys. But the whole entire part was that it was about, was setting up how they hate each other. And this is just another step in their angle. What do you think of the angle, man?
Yeah. Number one, I'm very glad you brought this up because you're not even going to mention the great Ox Baker, because this might be the best Ox Baker match I've ever seen. That's why I'm like going, this isn't bad.
He had a couple of decent ones in Houston. Gino was one of his better opponents, and actually the Spoiler Dad had a good match with him too.
Okay. And look, both those guys are awesome. And I love Ox Baker. I adore Ox Baker. So to see that you included this gave me a chance to see babyface Ox Baker.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I'm like, I don't know if I ever seen that. And he's a babyface, and he's going to get his hands on Gino, and he's doing okay. Of course, it's Gino making him look like $1 million, but he's hanging in there better than I've ever seen Ox hanging in there. And I broke your arm. And now he goes, then Jose, at the next show, I'm going to break your neck.
Yeah.
And that's when Jose is like, you motherfucker, boom, rips his shirt off. Like, here, Ox Baker. Actually, now, this might be the only really great Ox Baker match on film. But it's for, you know, the real feud. But yeah. Ox Baker in that role of the big fucking badass giant who's a babyface. Yeah, and he's pounding Gino, selling every fucking thing amazingly. But one last thing. For any of you out there, I'm not going to tell my Ox Baker story about when I met Ox Baker and what a wonderful, nice man he was. I've told it before. But when you knock Ox Baker, you're like, oh, Ox Baker sucked. Ox Baker was awesome. He was a character that doesn't exist anymore. He was a living monster man with those fucking eyebrows and the whole look, and he had a mystique about him, like Abdul.
Escape from New York, yeah.
And that's my exact point. I was like, and by the way, anyone who shits on Icebreaker, hey, were you in Escape from New York? No? No. Go fuck yourself. Icebreaker rules.
Yeah, John Icebreaker, Kurt Russell, Donald Pleasance.
Uh-huh.
A few other great people.
Adrian, was that eight? Adrian Barbeau. Adrian Barbeau.
Yep. A lot of great people in that movie. So.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Icebreaker was a character from the 70s, and one of my favorites. So it's like, I don't look for 5-star matches from Icebreaker.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
And this was really good.
Yeah, this was fun. And then we get leads us to 2 weeks later, and it's January 19th, 1979. Gino versus Jose, Texas Death Match in a cage. Mm-hmm. I love this match. I gave it 4.25 stars. Right off the bat, I'm loving Jose going after Gino's arm as, like, revenge and, like, hey, you broke my arm? I'm going to break your arm, motherfucker. I love all based on the Gino breaking of Jose's arm. Both guys use the cage as a weapon. Jose's punches are just amazing here. Just just loving Jose trying to destroy Gino's arm. Such an easy story to tell here. Jose busted open Gino, biting the cut. Just great, great, great storytelling. Punching the cut. Now Gino is Gino now busts up Jose, and he's on the cut. Just wrestling 101. Jose finally makes the comeback. He's been selling his ass off, and he returns the favor. And he busts Gino open, and Jose's punching the cut again. Just great storytelling, and all between all this stuff, there's all these different falls because it's a Texas Death Match too. Jose back to destroying the arm later in the match, so I liked how it went full circle, and I thought the finish was a great heel finish to put heat on Gino. I thought this was excellent stuff and really epic for the time. What do you think?
Oh, this was awesome. So apparently this is the very first time they were going to show a fence match on television in the area. Because it's a fence match.
Yeah.
And Paul proceeds to say that, you know, before they used the fence, you see, we used a fish net.
Yeah, I know.
And it didn't work. So we decided it had to be a cage. And I'm like, never go to the first idea. You know, I was like, what can we do? I've got it, boss, a fish net. Or he said, a fish net. And no one corrected him and said, that's good, but no, I guess we're going to do fish net. That didn't work. And the ref and the announcer, what was the rule in the match? It was like, you could be as many falls as possible, right?
Yeah, but if you didn't get up after the count of 10, you lost. Yeah.
So the announcer says there can be anywhere from 3 to 33 falls. And I was like, was that as high as you could count? They said it could go on forever.
Right.
33. And it could be less than 3. That was ill conceived. But then Paul gets in this line. There's two reasons why there's a cage. At first, he goes, to keep the wrestlers inside, and he pauses. And I'm waiting for them to use it as a weapon. And then he goes, and to keep the fans out. And I'm like, fucking Texans.
Hell yeah.
Fucking Texans. You got to, that's why there's a fence, for their safety, you maniacs. And Paul knows his audience. And also, no one has ever climbed over the top. Paul said that it's something no one has ever accomplished. So, and that puts it over, because like, I'm sure when this was being shown, like, it's the first cage match or fence match on TV there.
Yeah.
And he's saying no one's ever done that before, because he can say that.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. I'm sure if you're watching that and you're 8 years old, you're like, holy shit. Paul's the guy who keeps calling you guys bloodthirsty all the time in this footage. So I think I know what he knew his audience. But again, like I said before, if this is your TV show and you were a kid or a teenager, and only once in a while this happens, yeah. It's when you like pull your buddies over, you're like wrestling, and you'll even when you're like 13 or 14, and you kind of think you know, or that was back then at least, you like. This is what was said amongst a lot of 13 and 14 year olds. Dude, I know this is all fake, but this is real.
Yep.
You know, you always had that. That was when you were at that point where you still hung on to that, and it was stuff like this.
Yeah, your dad would say, "This wrestling's not real, son.
Yeah,
it's fake." I'm like, well, maybe that earlier match is fake, but this was real.
This one's real. Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, that one's fake. You know, you could tell. But this, and Paul on the commentary, this could, the audio from this could have been from a 1930s broadcast of wrestling on the radio. The way he was calling this, it was amazing. He mentioned it. Oh, he got him with a crotch lift and a slam. And I'm like, yeah, that usually costs an extra $65. But,
Jesus.
And Jose. He's arguing that Gino can't quit because Gino's trying to quit just to end the fall. And he's trying to argue that if he quits, that means he quits the match and he should win. And I'm like, oh, he's got a point. But it's like Gino trying to figure out a way, you know, to be like, if I just keep giving up and we have to start new, I could maybe eventually get my advantage in, you know, and just amazing little, just bit of what I say ring psychology is, and then just and the heat that crowd is. He was right to put the fence up.
Hell yeah,
that crowd was gonna fucking run in that
hell yeah
cage. And bloody as fuck, and those punches. Yeah, this is fucking awesome.
Good stuff. And that leads us to June 29th, 1979. We have Gina Hernandez, Grand Marcus, Killer Tim Brooks. Versus Jose Lothario, El Halcón, and Mil Máscaras. What you make of this?
Let's see. Paul in that suit. I was taken aback by that amazing accent of yours. I'm sorry.
Well, I took this Spanish class when I was in high school. And my Spanish teacher, I might not remember all the freaking translations very well, but I did remember how to pronounce words because she was a stickler for pronouncing the words properly.
Okay. In that case, I take back my making fun of you about that because that's completely understandable. It's like, I always hate it when people throw it. Like when people like say like ricotta cheese and they go, no, I'm ricotta. I'm like, yeah, what? You're not from Italy.
It's more of a because the teacher would just.
Yeah, you had a teacher. Okay, if you had a teacher who beat your fucking knuckles with a ruler until you get it fucking right, then no problem.
Yeah, it was one of those classes where you spoke no English in the class. You got to speak Spanish.
Yeah.
And you better damn say it properly because then you. I think that was even worse than not knowing the translations.
I took German, so if they said that, they'd be very uncomfortable with just roomfuls of kids speaking nothing but German. Paul is in that suit, big lapels. It's 1979 because this thing is tan and yellow, motherfucker, and just I mean that was the height of like nouveau riche fashion.
Right.
Like Herb Tarlick and shit, man. And
oh, God. Yeah.
It, you know, I mean, that's dudes dressed like that.
Oh, no, and, I have. There's pictures of me and my brother when they, for like freaking weddings and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
With a
plaid
suit on. Yeah, no, it was.
Dude, the family picture that we had, me and my dad are in these matching maroon suit things with the big fucking lapels and shit.
Every family damn reunion they play the pull out the slides and it's always the same stupid picture of me and my brother and the stupid we look like a sportscaster from the 70s and stuff.
Yeah, but you know, but if you had that giant goddamn motherfucking fucking boss ring that Paul Bosch has on that makes sure to show, and you could and those cauliflower ears and that fucking suit, you're allowed to be like, yeah, what are you gonna say about this? I am the stylish motherfucker on television, man. And another T-shirt, I shaved his head. Gino has a guy at the mall.
He knows a guy at the mall.
He knows a guy. Gino knows a guy.
It's next to the arcade.
Yeah. And Goliath. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I think that's all I had. Is Goliath in this?
No.
Okay, that's different notes.
I'll take over.
Oh, no. But the match itself, I thought was, I thought it was okay. You know.
Yeah, it wasn't any, it was a fun match.
Sorry.
You know, sometimes it's tough with those two ring things to work it. I like
Miller. Oh, wait a minute. I know. I'm sorry. I thought you told me that this match wasn't available anymore.
It isn't. I got it on YouTube.
Oh, okay. No, so I'm like going, where? I'm looking through my notes. Here, this is a little behind the scenes, everybody, of Space City.
Yeah.
I was looking through my notes going, where did I don't have this. I better fake it.
I was covered real quick.
Yeah, please.
And it's just, you know, there's a real fun Mill, Mascaris, and Brooks rope running spot. The heels did a great job of making Mill look good. It seemed like this match is more about Mill than about anybody else, which will have a lot in the Mill Mascaris match.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
wait. Are you actually suggesting to me that in a six-man match scenario, Mill Mascaris is going to make sure that no matter what else is going on, it's all about Mill motherfucking Mascaris?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a very busy match. It was still good. But then that leads us to October 19, 1979, and we get Jose Lothario versus Gran Marcus. Well, what you make of this one, Johnny?
Let's see. Lothario versus Marcus. This is for the NWA Caribbean title?
Yep.
I love that. The Caribbean title. So do you think maybe that's like a reward title because you get a vacation down in the Caribbean
for a little while? I'd go after that belt quite often, man.
Yeah, you know, if you think that'd be a more popular belt, you know, I gotta go defend it down there. Ah, great. You know, you dance into Billy Ocean. It'd be awesome. He goes, Blonde Gino is at ringside, and he goes right after him. You know, Jose's got his head shaved, you know, and he's got the T-shirt. Of course, I shaved Jose Lothario's head bald.
Yep, and, I love it.
Awesome. And the Jose does not look good, his head shaved bald. He's like a big Mexican Curly Joe Dorita just coming at you. But they announced the name of the second. The creepy little second guy.
Okay.
His name is, and he couldn't have the more appropriate name. Tommy Fushi.
That's right.
He goes, his second, Tommy Fushi. And I'm like, oh, that fits. That's
terrible. Yeah, he looked like the guy who would carry like the spit bucket for boxers, you know?
Okay. He looked like the rat guy from the Dick Tracy villains from the movie. I'm in pest control. I know a fucking rat mutant hybrid when I see one. The guy looked just a weaselly thin mustache. Yeah, he looked like an evil emaciated Walt Disney.
That's funny.
He stinks. Maybe Jose actually gets to live in Jamaica if he wins the match. I loved this match too, by the way. I thought this was a lot of fun. And just the fact that it was for this title, you know. And Marcus isn't anything fucking great, I don't think, to be perfectly honest with you. Marcus kind of leaves me cold.
Yeah, but for the most part, he left me cold. It was weird, though. Every now and then, like, he had a good match here, and then I remember him and Harley Race had a great match with him. But really? I mean, it's Harley Race. But.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see later,
They made him take off his mask for the title match against Harley. Total old school.
Oh yeah, well, as we'll see later in this footage, he's really not very smart. He's fucking dumb. Gino just manipulates him.
Oh yeah,
it's amazing. And at the end. I think it was just, for me, it's all about how awesome Jose is. You know, I'm like, yeah, you know, because the punches, and Marcus's selling of the punches is fantastic. So, him and his big white diaper. I always hated the white the white mask with the white.
Yeah, I know. We've heard plenty of your Mr. Wrestling 2 creepiness talk.
At least Mr. Wrestling 2.
Stems from where you used to work at an old folk home. I mean, I understand.
I know. Well, yes. Yes,
probably
it does.
Saw plenty of men in a white diaper.
So. I guess. That's true. Now, and in masks.
And you had to change them, too.
No, I didn't do that.
Okay.
That wasn't my job. No, I'm the one that walked around and put masks on them. But at least Wrestling 2 had, like, black outline around the eyes and stuff. Just that Medico's sort of just white and white. I'm like, you look like a Q-tip.
Yeah, but I'm with you. For me, it was more about the angle. I enjoyed it. And yeah, and it was all about Jose, whose punches looked awesome. At one point, he had this like running punch, which was just absolutely incredible. And Marcus took this huge bump over the top rope off it. It was awesome. They had some really good moments. And that leads us to October 19th, 1979. And we get Jose Lothario, El Halcón, Mil Máscaras versus Gino Hernandez, Grand Marcus, and Grand Goliath. And I absolutely love this match. I give it 4.25 stars. Gino has the shirt on, again, pissing him off. Jose and Gino want to tear each other apart. Jose and Gino are brawling on the floor. Jose's punches are just wicked. They make you believe they really hate each other. And finally it settles down a little bit, but the faces get a shine, and I enjoy the flair here. Gino picks his spots to get to the advantage. Heels are great at stooging for the faces. Love all of this, and I love the falls for all this. The third fall, Gino's all over Jose, and Jose's punches is just a game changer. Loving all the pairing offs, like they're doing like lucha pair offs. The finish is a thing of beauty in the third fall. Love the closing piece, and is a pull apart with Jose and Gino. It felt like Gino and Jose were like this ball of hatred, and they'd be working a match, and all of a sudden these two pit bulls would be coming across and causing trouble, almost like a tornado in a way. While these guys are playing a game, the tornado comes over and wreaks havoc on everything. I thought it was awesome stuff, a way to push the feud again using the tag situation, but making this the point of interest and get people really hyped for another rematch. What you make of it?
Okay, so now that I've got my notes in order, this was the match that started with Paul Bausch in the awesome suit. And he was really putting over. He's like, we're seeing some of the greatest Mexican wrestlers ever. And then he puts it over again during the match. I think he says something like, well, Gino's Latin American, but the rest of them got their start south of the border. I didn't know. Okay, I guess there's a difference, but I think it plays to what you were just talking about earlier. Gino does not like to be called a Mexican. That's why I was like, well, why is Paul saying that? It seems odd. Now I know. He was selling that whole thing that you mentioned about that he doesn't want to be called a Mexican. And I'm like, oh, now I know. That's brilliant. I didn't like the match as much as you did. I fucking hate Mil Máscaras.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they did a really good job with him here, and highlighted his spots, and when he got to get nasty, he got nasty. But I
don't like his spots. I don't like him. I don't like the way he bounces around like a ballerina superhero. Hell, I like Halcón. Halcón's fucking good. And another guy who's the surprising guy in this match, because Goliath, when you look at him, he looks like, I'm trying to remember the actor's name, and he just passed away. It's a great actor. His name was John something, began with a P. and he was in like Barton Fink. He was in Miller's Crossing. He had like a raspy voice and the bald head just like that. Gosh, some people know the actor I'm talking about, but I mean, he looks like the guy. He looks like he should be sitting at the counter on an episode of Alice, you know.
Gotcha.
You know, and he's got my hairline exactly, you know, and he looks like he stinks. And I've seen him before where I was like, yeah, Goliath that kind of goofed on him. He's fucking awesome in this match.
Part of a legendary tag team, you know.
Yeah. Well, the other dude is okay. Was his legendary tag team with Marcus?
No.
Okay, then, because I'm like, oh, okay, because, but between him and Gino in there, and as Gino is the stooging heel, and Goliath sort of as this like wrecking ball guy, but he takes these awesome bumps, you know, and he's fast for a guy his size. He's super fast. The way he sells an arm drag and some shit, like, damn, Goliath really, or as Paul called him for some reason, Goliath or Goliath. I was like, no, it's Goliath. Don't worry. And the fighting, here's what got me is that right before they couldn't start the match because Gino and Jose are fighting. The match starts. They have the first fall and then they start fighting again. Goes to the commercial. They come back. They're still fucking fighting. And this continues through the falls. There's no break in anything because as soon as each fall happens, these two guys are fucking each other up. And there's a neat thing where the heels are trying to maybe help Gino, but Mill and Halcone are just like keeping them away, saying like, let them settle this like men, you know? And I'm just like, okay, well, obviously the heels are nicer friends. That's why the heels are better people. You know, you jump in and you help your buddy in a fight.
Huh. Yeah, oh yeah, and Grand Goliath's partner was Black Gordon.
Black Gordon, that's right. That's
famous
right.
Tag team, yeah.
Yeah, Black, who we've seen too, and he's really
fantastic.
Really
good. Yeah.
I hate the human centipede headlock spot. You know, I hate it. It was done well.
Yeah, it almost felt like it was 2017 spot almost.
I mean, you see, that's the kind of shit you see in the indies now, and you go, go fuck yourself. But what I do appreciate, and it's from being in this freaking musical and trying to learn dance stuff, they hit that perfectly, and then when it broke up, they like it was like watching a dance because they each do-si-do'd around into who right in front of who their guy to punch was.
Yeah.
So from a performance perspective, mwah, but you know, I was like, it's not one of my favorite things in wrestling. The reason I love this is I think basically it's like, remember the old phrase, I went to a boxing match and a hockey fight broke out?
Yeah.
To me, this was like, I went to an awesome fight and an okay match happened in the middle of it.
All right.
I was like, it was okay, but obviously that's the story that they were telling is, despite what's going on, this is all about these two and how much they hate each other where they can't stop fighting. It is a constant battle. This whole like, oh, it's time for your 2-minute break. No, nope, nope. They're going to keep warring. And that's why I love it. I think it overshadows anything else in it. And Mil Máscaras. Of course, Mil Máscaras gets the win and acts like he fucking cured cancer.
True. But it was a pretty spectacular dive and stuff. Then we get on a week later, October 26, 1979, Jose Lothario and Tiger Conway Jr. Go against Gino in the Grand Marcus. Any thoughts here?
Yes. Let's see. This was for the U.S. American, or as the announcer says, for the U.S. American title and the title belts. I was like, really? I mean, it's not the U.S. American. It's the American.
Yeah, it's the same damn belts that World Class had in the 80s with Midnight Feuding and Von Erichs' dynamic duo.
And he doesn't need to say title and the title belts. We know that. Is he being paid by the word?
Could be.
And that ring announcer suit, by the way, also. Oof. Maybe that suit was pretty flashy. Maybe he needs the money for the suit.
Right.
Jose's out there, and he's got his sombrero on, and he's handing it to the guy who's there to take the shit, and the guy puts it on his head, and all I could think is, like, you know, if you were black and that was Terry Funk, you're about to get your ass kicked. I'm enjoying this match a lot. I'm like, Marcus, I don't think it's that great. But
Gino, I'm not a big fan of him either.
He's okay, but Gino and Jose and Tiger are in there too, so great, you know, it's fantastic. But and then early in, Tiger goes for fucking dive to the outside. Oh yeah. Oh no. As Paul said, ooh, because Tiger fucking kills himself on a fucking dive.
Still pretty cutting edge for 1979.
Fuck yeah. You know, oh, what do they call it? A tope? You know?
Yeah, like, tope.
I was like, he dove.
When he landed, it looked like suicide.
It was suicide because he landed top chest, neck, chin first. And just,
yeah, and you could definitely tell he felt every bit of it.
Every bit of it. And, but to his, and you're like, holy shit. I read Tiger killed himself, and except Paul goes, ooh, like he was like, oh shit. And Tiger, like you do when you almost die, bounces up, gets in the ring, and starts like running the ropes, high spot shit.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like, I'm okay. And runs in because he almost broke his neck.
Yep, it's all on adrenaline.
Oh,
yep.
Totally. And, there's a guy sitting at ringside who's really down with Tiger Conway Jr. And he looks like a fat redneck Wayne Newton. He's got a pencil thin mustache, tight polyester golf shirt, and he's really into the match. He's watching there, and his hair's all, he looks like he combs his hair with buttered toast. And whenever Tiger's in a chin lock and he's fighting, he pumps up the black power fist at Tiger. I'm like, he's down with the cause.
There you go.
He's down with the cause. And otherwise he's just watching intently, but whenever Tiger needs a boost, he pumps that fist up at him. It's the best. I love that guy. And there's a Mexican guy sitting behind him who's just, fuck, he's also dressed to the nines for that time. You know, this was the night out with his date or his wife, whatever, because he looked good. And he was jumping up. He was all on his feet, just popping and yelling at shit. And I was like, yeah, that guy looks like a so much fun to be with at that show. He's awesome. They hate Gino. They fucking hate him. This crowd... There's not one motherfucker in this crowd. Well, we've heard a few like people who like get behind him a little every now and then, but at this point, no. They fucking hate goddamn Gino. And you got your Mexican guy and your African American guy in front of a crowd of people who, when you look at them sometimes, you're like, man, maybe not the most racially progressive people. But no. But that goes out the window briefly at the wrestling matches because it's like you forget about their racism and I'm not saying the whole crowd's racist, but come on, let's be honest about wrestling crowds. I'm not just saying in the South. Okay. All that shit goes out the window because they fucking hate that fucking Gino Hernandez asshole so much. And they just want to see these two fucking good guys kick the shit out of that little asshole. And yeah, it just transcends race.
Yeah, even, not in this match, but even in the previous match, you heard a couple, we want Gino chance because they wanted him in the ring to get his ass.
Yeah, when you heard we want Gino here, it was because they wanted him in the ring to get murdered.
Yeah.
Don't misinterpret that. Don't misinterpret. Yeah. Anyone who gets a chance to still watch this, don't misinterpret that as thinking, hey, there's people cheering. No. That's like, because he was reacting to it like, no. He's, Gino Gino and Lothario are, and I'm glad you picked them, are revelations because we've already talked about Lothario. But, you know, and you know, people are just like, what, really? He was that great? And everyone agrees who's watched the footage. But getting to a point I always like to make, and it's the last one, probably so. Gino Hernandez has a bad reputation amongst the wrestling historian, old geek guys like us. And it's based on just nothing but world-class footage when he was a fucking on so much fucking coke. You know, let's be fucking honest, working just with the Von Erichs, also on that much fucking coke. And still managed to have some entertaining matches, but there's only so much you can do with those fucking Von Erichs. And I love the Von Erichs, okay? I'm a big fan, but there's only so much you can do with them. And to where, when everyone talked about how great Gino Hernandez was for years, the whole thing's like, yeah, that's just one of those urban legends of wrestling, or aftermag bullshit. And no, it's not. This is what they're talking about. Everything we've seen of him here, this is the proof, if you were going to go to court about this.
Yeah.
Gino Hernandez was fucking amazing. You know, this is what we, and I'm so glad because at least within maybe some circles, it's kind of cool that, oh, maybe the thing you don't remember is how he died and that terrible classless angle and shit.
Yeah.
How about this instead? Because he's amazing. So we also got, it's new champs, you know, and that crowd, again, that crowd, that's my point. That was it. They won. They won the belts from those fucking things. Because they don't really. And then at the end, Marcus and Gino are arguing, and Gino is just dressing down Marcus, you know, like, you dumb motherfucker. You know, what's the matter with you? And they slowly build the crowd to where Marcus is going to be like, what? What? Maybe I should hit him. Maybe I should hit him. But as soon as Gino realizes that he might get hit, he starts apologizing. I'm sorry. No. And the crowd's getting hotter and hotter, and Marcus keeps, you know, playing it up. And I'm going, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? And Gino's like, I'm sorry. And I thought they were going to go with Marcus, go to hit him, and then hug him, and then they like both boo at the crowd like they fucked with him. But no, they went with Gino just hugs him.
Yep.
And Marcus's arms are up because, yeah, Paul did mention a few times this was a love affair between the two. Oh, it looks like the love affair is over. He loved doing that with Gino. He did it with David Tully too. He loved doing that. Well, not that there's anything wrong with it, but and Marcus accepts the hug, and Gino starts like, no, I was wrong. No, please, you know, you're the best. And Marcus starts like flexing his muscles, like, okay. I'm like, Marcus is dumb.
Yeah.
Gino holds the ropes open for him, and Marcus steps out. I'm like, because I didn't give Marcus any personality any time I saw him. But if his personality is fucking just a big dummy, you know, because he's fucking jacked. You know, that's a wide, muscular dude who looks like he will fuck you up. And, you know, but he's just a big dummy. That's great. So at least at the end, I'm like, hey, I found something to like about Grand Marcus.
That's funny. Yeah, I enjoyed the match too. I gave it like 3.25. I thought it was fun stooging by the heels early on, and that top rope dive by Tiger is pretty state of the art. Even though he almost kills himself in 79. Second fall is getting heat on Jose. Tiger gets a hot tag, but they cut him off, and then he makes a comeback. Third fall continues with the heat on Jose. Double heat, and they work on Tiger. Jose gets a hot tag and just clears house and kicks ass and has it. But yeah, you covered it really well. And then the final match is from January 4th, 1980. Gino Hernandez, Grand Marcus, Killer Tim Brooks, versus Jose Lothario, Tiger Conway, and Kerry Von Erich. Kerry doesn't have the long, flowing hair yet, but he still looks like a star. Still looks like a million bucks. That pinfall that Kerry does in the third fall, where he jives from ring to ring, was pretty freaking awesome. I thought Kerry was really great here at such a young age, and like working the crowd and working the apron and doing a lot of the little stuff. Really, really fun. This is for the Johnny Valentine trophy. It was pretty all action, and then we get a really hot angle where Gino breaks up with Grand Marcus, and Killer Brooks joins Gino kicking the crap out of Grand Marcus. So we got a really fun angle afterwards. What'd you make of all of it, Johnny?
Well, honestly, somehow this is the one I missed too.
Okay.
I don't know. I missed something in there, but I'll just add to my previous point by your description. That might not have been a one-time thing, because if Marcus turned a good guy after this, then
he did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is where he starts getting like his title shot against Harley.
Okay. Because when you're in a heel relationship, like the love affair, you know, and you're the big dummy who keeps getting fooled by this guy, you know, like, oh, no, I love, hey. And then when the really bigger scumbag guy comes along and you're going to go with him, and eventually, you know, they'll turn on you and beat the shit out of you, because you're in a new gang now, you know, and you got a new partner now. And the crowd immediately feels sympathy for the dummy and can't wait for him to fucking prove that he's not a dummy and kick the shit out of those guys who just did that to him. So that's great booking right there. So that's, and again, I shit on the Von Erichs a lot, but Kerry could be awesome at times, you know. Besides Kerry, Kerry was awesome.
He had a lot of great matches. Okay.
Yeah, you know. Kerry, he was very athletic and could sell. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I enjoy a lot of Kevin matches, but, you know.
That guy, Potato City, and it was so funny. He'd be getting his ass kicked, and all of a sudden, I was a kid, I'm not even a kid, I always joked that I felt Kevin Von Erich made Terry Gordy like the biggest baby face in the company, because he'd just potato him and beat the living crap out of Terry Gordy with his stiffness and stuff.
Yeah, you know, when I was,
just felt so bad.
When I was watching that, it's funny, when I was watching that, I was watching classic World Class. When we got World Class in our area, I remember, like, I noticed the TV guy, we were getting a new UHF station out of Philadelphia, Philly 57. And I went, got a TV guy, because I went, there's going to be wrestling on it. What's it going to be?
Oh, and it did. Actually, it did cover World Class.
And boom, it was World Class right before that Cotton Bowl show that we just talked about. And Classic World Class was after it. And then on Saturday night, they showed even a different Classic World Class. It was a few years, like a year or a half ahead of the other one. So I was like immersed in World Class. And when I saw Kevin Von Erich beating the shit out of motherfuckers, I didn't think like, oh shit. I was like, yeah, kick his ass. I'm like, you're like, I know it's fake. He's just really good at this, right?
he didn't blur the line very well.
He'd be a hero in the indies right now. So don't, yeah, he's a stiff striker who doesn't sell. Come on. With an amazing body, and he's athletic.
Well, John, man, it was a great, fun run.
Yes.
Guys, whoever, all you listeners, if you guys listen, appreciate y'all sticking with us, enjoying the shows, enjoying the service, enjoying our podcast, discussing the service. It meant a lot to us.
But let me just say, this show is was a niche of a niche of a niche. But those of you who listen to it, always gave us really, really nice feedback. So thank you.
Again, you guys, yeah, I appreciate it all. Have a good one. And see you when we see you. So long.
That's all, folks.
Oh, man.
winter's wet and the summer's hot, take a match in Puerto Rico. Why not? Power and adrenaline flowing like amber from the recesses of the earth. Put on your waders and twitch. When the water runs high sometimes, twitch. When the tide ebbs low, see the sights, maybe go downtown. Sometimes you get some heat, sometimes it follows you around. When the blade hits the bone, everybody hears it sing. Shower room full of people, no one hears a goddamn thing. A twitch. When the current runs wild sometimes, twitch. When the contact howls, the concrete floor.